Hello, this is Rick Lucan. Welcome to Clubhouse Conversation.
Every summer in Kansas City, 25 men have one simple mission: to win. Starting pitchers, corner power hitters, middle relievers, speedy gloves up the middle, closers, utility infielders, backup catchers, and they're each remembered here. From 1969 to last year, all Royals careers have been preserved with the most comprehensive collection of facts, memories, and stories in existence. Welcome to Clubhouse Conversation.
And this is the place where we make your day better if you are a diehard KC Royals fan. What's up? It's Dave-O, and I'm glad you're along for another edition of Clubhouse Conversation, the place where we catch up with all your favorite current and former Royals players and get the entire story that you can't find on the back of a baseball card, on the baseball reference page, on the baseball almanac page. I love those websites. I love baseball cards, but I love hearing from the players themselves about the stories that go behind everything they went through in pro baseball, and that's why we're here on Clubhouse Conversation to preserve the memory of every single player in Royals history, if I have it my way, one by one. And today, it's Rick Lucan we're about to be joined by here in April of 2018. Rick Lucan, man, it's been how long ago? About 30 years ago almost since he pitched here? I can't believe that. When I was a kid, I remember watching Rick Lucan pitch at Omaha and in KC. He was here during the 1989 season. Out of the Royals bullpen was quite good, too. 19 appearances in 89 for Rick Lucan. He had a 3.42 ERA out of the Royals pen. You might remember he was involved in a couple of fairly famous trades for the Royals. Came over with Danny Tartable from the Seattle Mariners originally in exchange for Scott Bankhead, Mike Kingery, and Steve Shields. And then the Texas A&M graduate, Rick Lucan, 6'6", hard-throwing reliever, was traded after the 1989 season to the Atlanta Braves. The Royals wanted Gerald Perry to DH, and they sent Lucan with Charlie Liebrandt to the Bravos. And the rest is history. Lucan pitched there in 1990, spent some time with the Blue Jays as well. And I'm excited to talk about both his times in the Mariners organization coming up through that minor league system with a lot of great players. And, of course, his times here in KC ad nauseum. And then even I think it'll be pretty cool hearing about the stories of that Atlanta Braves year in 1990, right before they took off. But he played with a lot of those young guys that would be part of their nucleus that helped them turn the corner in the 90s. And Rick Lucan joins us now by phone from his home down in the Houston area. Rick, first of all, it's a pleasure to talk to you. And second of all, how's everything going with you?
It's going. There's life beyond baseball, and it keeps me busy.
Yeah, what are you doing these days? You're down in Texas. What's keeping you busy in 2018?
Well, 2018 has got me as an offshore landman, which people have a lot of difficulty understanding what that is. But I work in oil and gas, and I get to solve some certain problems with respect to oil companies wanting to drill in the Gulf of Mexico.
It seems like everybody in the Houston area works in an oil company, right?
Well, it's either that or we own horses, so hey.
Either way sounds great. So were you the last couple of years, I know that I'm assuming you're an Astros fan now living down there. I know the Royals beat your Astros in an improbable come-from-behind fashion back in 2015, but were you happy to see the Royals have some success those couple of years after a long dry spell?
Absolutely. The Royals were one of my favorite teams to play for, if not the most favorite team. So seeing them be successful was great. I have a lot of respect for that organization, the players that I played with, the coaches that I had at the time.
Do you make it out to watch the Astros much?
Oh, probably anywhere from a half a dozen to a dozen games a year.
Okay. That's an exciting ball club to watch. I mean, that's going to be a dynasty for about another 5 to 8 years, I bet.
Well, we hope so.
Yeah, they've got it.
Get all the pieces in place.
They sure do, and they're all towards the just now entering arbitration year, so it should be a fun little thing. Well, we'll come back to 2018 later, but let's go way back and start from your beginning. Are you ready to go deep into your memory?
Hey, I'll go in the yearbook if you want to.
Okay. Well, Spring Woods High School is where you went to in Houston. But before we talk about that, your childhood then. So where did baseball kind of fit into your childhood? Was it always your favorite sport, you know, to watch and play? And then were the Astros your favorite team growing up?
As far as the childhood, yeah, that was at a time where the only things to do outside of the house were sports and the only organized sports at the time were, I guess, were the three big ones, which were football, baseball, and basketball. And, yeah, I was tall, but I couldn't jump, and I liked football, but certainly liked baseball better.
Yeah, baseball is the game. Who is your biggest influence, you know, kind of teaching you baseball when you were growing up?
Well, growing up, it was kind of a learn-it-on-your-own type thing. There weren't, at least it didn't seem like, as many players around that were willing to help out young athletes. So it was pretty much you just went out and played, and if you got better, you got better. But later on in life, obviously being from Texas and Houston, you couldn't help but be a Nolan Ryan fan.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And how about high school football? Did you play high school football, by the way, or not, or just basketball?
I played 1 year of basketball and gave that up because it cut into baseball. And I would have loved to have played football, but going back in time, that was when AstroTurf came out. Ugh. And I saw so many of my friends getting injured when the first AstroTurf came out that I just said, you know, I love baseball too much to play a game that has got a good chance of getting me hurt.
Yeah, I was just wondering. I know football's so big down there in Texas. So you graduated from Springwoods High School. So you were taken by the San Francisco Giants first round of the 1979 draft, 18th overall. You did decide against signing, and you went to Texas A&M. You know, what led you to make that decision, and how difficult was that for you to bypass MLB for college?
Well, it was a tough choice, but San Francisco that year had two picks in the first round, and I was the second of those two picks, and they were able to quickly sign, I believe, their first pick. And when it came time to talking with me, they had a budget of money available for their first round, or what would typically be the first round pick, which they, for the most part, exhausted when they signed their first player. And there wasn't much left, so it was easy choice for me to go to school.
Yeah, and you made the most of those days there. So you went to Texas A&M. What made you choose A&M, and then what are your favorite memories of your college days?
Well, I had a chance to go to several colleges and look at their programs and talk with their coaches. And, I guess it was a little bit presumptuous of me as a freshman, but I wanted to play. And some of the other programs that were successful around the country, they were successful for a reason, and it was communicated to me that there was a more than likely chance I wouldn't pitch my freshman year and maybe not my sophomore year, and A&M was offering me an opportunity to be able to pitch my freshman year. So,
what were you studying there at Texas A&M?
I started out in engineering, and baseball just didn't really let me focus on that to be a good student. So I changed over to business, where I didn't have to spend quite as much time in math and physics and chemistry and some of the other tougher disciplines at the time. So I'm not saying that business was easy, but it wasn't quite as demanding as an engineering school.
So then after your junior season, you got drafted again, this time by the Cincinnati Reds in the 12th round of the 82 draft. That was probably a little bit easier choice, I'm guessing, to stay in school and not sign. Is that right?
It was pretty much for the same reason. My value at that time obviously wasn't as much as it was my freshman year or prior to my freshman year, but I tried to make an objective decision based on signing bonus, what it would cost for me to finish out school. And the scale was a little lopsided at that point, so I decided to go back and for another year of school.
Well, and then you ended up finishing up there at A&M and got drafted in 1983 in the 27th round by the Seattle Mariners. And the scout who signed you was Steve Vrabelic. What do you remember about signing your first pro contract, and how exciting was it for you to get started?
Well, it was a little bit different than what started out a couple of 4 years ago. 27th round was pretty much a plane ticket to minor league baseball and a pat on the back, and that was the, probably the extent of the signing bonus, and it came down to how bad you really wanted to play. And I thought, you know, I spent all this time playing ball. I want to give it a shot and see where it'll take me.
Yeah, well, before we go through your career kind of year by year, remind our listeners what kind of pitcher you were, what pitches you threw, and then where you sat and topped out at velocity-wise.
Well, I guess in today's terms, I would be defined as a power pitcher. I was pretty much going to challenge anybody who came up to the batter's box with a bat in their hand, and that meant a lot of fastballs and a lot of sliders and an occasional curveball and knuckleball. I threw a knuckleball as my changeup because I figured if I was going to throw something slow, I wanted it doing something.
Really? That's rare to hear a power pitcher throwing a knuckleball. I always wonder why nobody does that. Did anybody else do that back then?
No, I got a lot of grief for it.
It's probably effective,
players,
though.
Players and coaches saying, you can't do that. You can't do that. Why are you doing that?
Wow.
And, yeah, it was interesting. And they didn't care for it too much.
Wow, that's interesting. And what were you sitting in the 90s then? Fastball, like low 90s, or?
In the low and occasional mid 90s, which, you know, nowadays that's almost average for a right-handed pitcher. But at that time, it had a little giddy up on it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you started with Bellingham in the rookie Northwest League. You pitched 12 out of 14 games as a starter, had a 3.56 ERA. You played with a young Edgar Martinez that year. Do you remember much about him?
Absolutely. A great hitter and a gentleman.
Yeah, and Hall of Fame hitter. And could you see the talent even back then?
Yeah, even at young of an age, you can see the players who have discipline and who work at what they're doing. And no, it's not 24/7, but it's enough to where you can tell the time that they're putting into it really means something. And you know, you could definitely see that with him.
Did you get pretty homesick being so far from home, or not too bad that first summer?
Yeah, I'd had an opportunity during college to play in some invitational summer leagues, both in Alaska and Cape Cod. So being away for a couple of months, something that I had done. So that year wasn't all that bad.
Well, you did toss a three-hit complete game that year. Do you remember that, or is that just my media guy that remembers that?
I think that might be your media guy.
Okay. It happened, I swear. It says it in the media guide. It's got to be real, right? I talk to a lot of guys, and they tell me, like, these horrible travel experiences or hotel experiences, especially when they're in rookie ball or A-ball, double-A. Did you ever have any, either that year or you know, in the minor leagues, any horrible hotels or travel bus breaking down experiences or anything?
Well, every story is interesting. Probably the one I remember the most was being on bus, and I think we were on our way to Spokane, Washington, and we'd stop by the side of the road for stretch our legs and get a drink. And when everybody got on board, the bus driver couldn't get the bus to start, so he said, okay, everybody out and push. We're going to jump start a bus. So that was the first time I'd ever seen anybody jump start a bus.
Wait,
he had all 25 players and coaches and trying to get a bus moving so that he could pop the clutch and get it started.
Oh, wow. And did it end up working then?
Oh, yeah. It started right up.
Wow.
I think the speedometer on that thing was broken at something like 400,000 miles.
So. Yep, sounds like the minor leagues. So the next year, then, 84, the Mariners had you completely skip A-ball. You went right to double-A with Chattanooga. You won 11 games, had a 3.79 ERA. You also had 5 complete games that year. So that first full season in pro ball with Chattanooga, what sticks out about that?
It was a learning experience. Chattanooga was at an old Ingle Stadium, if I remember, and you really, at that point, you learn how to pitch and not throw a ball. Our team that year struggled to put points on the board, so you learn how to pitch, and you learn how to keep yourself into a ball game pretty quick in your career.
Yeah, You did that, and then the next year you played at AAA Calgary in 85. Before we talk about that, you were also a non-roster invitee to Seattle's 85 spring training. So how big was that for you to go to a big league camp, and what do you remember about it?
A lot of fun being around those guys and getting a taste of what it's like to be very close to your dream of being able to play with the best. And, you know, Calgary was a tough situation. That was the first year that they were a AAA team. I think they were part of the Northwest League prior to that. But I remember us moving in to our apartments in a snowstorm, and I think we had summer for about 2 weeks. And it was a tough place to pitch with the cold.
I bet. And one guy you'd be playing with that year who you'd be traded with in the future is obviously Danny Tartable. Do you remember any early memories of Danny?
Absolutely. I think he led the team in home runs that year in Calgary.
Yeah, he could mash. He was huge. So then in 86, you went back to Double-A Chattanooga. I'm assuming that was probably a disappointing summer for you.
It was. That summer there, like I said, it was tough to pitch there. I had some I don't want to say injuries, just, you know, some issues with the cold and didn't play well. And, you know, going back to Double-A wasn't obviously my first choice, but if you look at it objectively, it was probably something that you could expect.
You played with a couple future Royals that year, Ross Jones at shortstop and Terry Bell, who you also played with in Memphis later. Do you remember those guys at all?
Absolutely. Terry, I remember back, as I mentioned, Terry was on my team when we had played in Kenai, Alaska during the summer in college. Well, and I guess my memory escapes me as far as the other player.
Ross Jones, yeah, he played shortstop for the Mets and Royals. Had a killer mustache.
That's right.
That's what I remember about that guy. So following the 86 season then, so this is where I get excited. So you get traded by the Mariners to the Royals along with Danny Tartable for Scott Bankhead, Mike Kingery, and Steve Shields. So take us back to the moment you found out. Where were you at when you found out you'd been traded? How did you find out, and what was your reaction?
Gosh, I think it was kind of like what a lot of players do. They find out on the news before the club's able to contact them and let them know that a trade's been made over the winter. And, you know, going to the Royals, as I mentioned to you before, with the class organization that they were, was something that really got me excited.
Yeah, you came over some great teams, too. Did you know anybody in the Royal system then when you, at first were acquired?
No, I think I was going over there blind along with Danny at that time.
Okay, and then in 87, you were at Double-A Memphis. You led the Chicks in wins, innings pitched, game started. That first season in Memphis, what sticks out about that?
Well, I was learning at that time, again, how to be a pitcher and trying to decide if I was going to be a power pitcher or trying to be a knuckleball pitcher. And it was, I liked Memphis a lot. It was a fun city. But again, that was a little while back and hard to remember all the details, but, ran across some lifelong friends at that point. Matt Winters being one of them.
Yeah. Love Matt. Talking to him soon here, actually. So, love that guy. So I never made it actually to a game there in Memphis, but what was the stadium like? What do you remember about that and I guess the city itself?
Well, the city was fun. The ballpark was an interesting ballpark. Home plate to fence was probably 20 feet, so pass balls were for a runner on third base. And as short as that distance was, the outfield fences were just as close, it seemed like, and easy to hit a home run. And other than that, the field was the first time I think that I had ever played on a turf field, as their infield at that time was all AstroTurf.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. And then 88 would be a big year for you. You earned a spot on the Royals 40-man roster. You split the year between Memphis and Omaha, 9-1, a 2.09 ERA. You had 14 saves. And that was the first time you were used pretty much exclusively as a reliever. So why was that decision made, and then were you cool with that at the time?
Well, that year being a long year, at the end of the year, my arm was killing me. And when I went home and saw what was at that time the Astros team doctor diagnosis, he said, you got some spurs in your elbow, which we ended up doing surgery on it and to clean it up. Not that there was any injury, just a lot of things that were creating a lot of pain in my elbow. And when I came back, the velocity that I had lost, which I guess somewhat had me thinking about becoming a knuckleball pitcher that year, all of a sudden returned and some. So when I came to spring training and they saw that velocity, I think that got them excited. And when they got excited, I got excited, because if it was going to be an opportunity for me to move along, then I certainly wanted to be a part of that.
So I see some names on those old teams that I love, you know, growing up. What do you remember about Mel Stottlemyre Jr.?
He brought a lot of pitching knowledge because of his dad, I guess, to the game, and he was one funny guy to be around.
Yeah. He's now the pitching coach for the Mariners, I think, now. So,
I think so.
Yeah. So 89 would be the year that you'd make it to the big leagues then. But you began the summer in Omaha. So I guess let's start off by 89 spring training then. So you'd had a great 1988 season. Did you feel like going into that spring you had a legit chance of making the club out of, you know, out of Baseball City?
I was hopeful, but given what I knew, the talent, you know, the pitching staff that the Royals had at that time, I guess I thought that there was a pretty good chance I was going back to Omaha, just because, again, I knew the talent that they had in the bullpen in Kansas City.
What about Baseball City then? What do you remember about that complex? I never got to go there, but I always wanted to.
It was gorgeous. You know, boardwalk that was part of Baseball City was brand new at the time. It was a novelty. It was built, I think, kind of as a, oh, maybe a Southern Hall of Fame area. There was a lot of memorabilia there. It was geared toward baseball. Yes, it was amusement. And it was kind of a go-between between Orlando at the time and if you kept on going west to Tampa and Busch Gardens, you know, something else to do along that interstate.
Did you ever go over and ride any of the rides on the boardwalk, you know, side over there?
Absolutely.
Were any of them good?
I think they were okay. I don't think they were the big thrillers that some of the bigger amusement parks today were, but they were fun to ride and something to do. And, you know, another thing is spring training, you know, even in Florida during February, it can be a little cool, so you don't always spend all your time outside.
Yeah, that's true. Now, so like I said, you started that year at Omaha in 89. So, you know, favorite memories of Rosenblatt Stadium. What do you remember about that old jewel? I miss it. They tore it down.
You know, I miss it too. I miss that they tore that place down. I hated that we had to go on a road trip for 10 days during the College World Series and how bad the College World Series tore the field up. Never having gotten a chance to make it that far in college, but yeah, there's a lot of nostalgia to that ballpark being the first. It'd be like, you know, in my mind, it'd be like kind of like moving Wrigley Field to somewhere else in Chicago and calling it different names and saying, okay, Cubs, you got to play there.
Right.
You know, it just wouldn't be the same.
Totally, totally with you on that. Did you ever go over to the zoo there beyond right field?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, a lot of times we would talk to our pitching coach, instead of having to run on the field, he'd let us go run the zoo.
Really?
Yeah.
So you just go in there with your cleats on and run around, or were you just with normal
no.
tennis shoes?
It was tennis shoes and shorts. You know, we'd go change and run all through the zoo.
Go peek at the giraffes. I like it. So then you pitch with one guy I wanted to ask you about on that Omaha team was a very young Kevin Apier. What do you remember about Ape at that age? Anything?
Young and wide-eyed, and he could definitely see that the Royals were high on him at the time and going to give him every opportunity to move along quickly. And he was, you know, he proved it in the minor leagues that he could compete, and he moved right along.
Yeah, he was a heck of a pitcher, one of the best in Royals history. So overall with Omaha, you had a 2.31 ERA, 16 games there, 16 saves, I should say. And so you made two different stints with KC, but let's talk about the first one first then. So it's the first week of June, 1989. You'd eventually make your first big league appearance in Seattle, but before we talk about that, this is one of my favorite questions to ask guys. So where were you at when you got that first call to the big leagues? Who told you the news? How did they tell you? And you know, what was that just overall moment like?
Well, I have to back up just a little bit. In AAA, you know, one of the good things about being in AAA is that because the cities are so far apart, you get to fly. Well, by the time the games are over in the evening, most of those airports are closed, so you fly out first thing in the morning, usually the first flight out in the morning. And we kind of had a rule amongst ourselves, or at least I did, that if you were up late and you were having to get up early, If it was going to be less than 5 hours of sleep, you just didn't go to sleep because you'd rather be tired than angry because you were having to get up.
Right.
So I was just barely outside of that five-hour range, and knowing that the alarm was going to be going off soon and the wake-up calls that we had because you didn't dare miss a flight, all of a sudden there's this banging on the door. And, you know, my roommate and I, Ed Hearn, both jumped up like, uh-oh, what's going on? And the manager's there, right, Sal Rendy, and he kind of looks at me and a real straight face. He says, get your gear packed. And I'm going, great, what have I done? He goes, you're not going with us. And I forget where we were going next. You know, I think I was in Oklahoma City at the time, and we were going to another town. He goes, you're not going with us. And you could see, obviously, the look on my face of confusion. He goes, you're going to Seattle. And he turned around and walked off.
So it took you, what, 3 or 4 seconds to put it all together? Like, oh, my gosh.
I think it was a little bit longer than 3 or 4 seconds. I think the door was open for at least a minute or two.
Who was the first person you called with the news?
Oh, obviously my wife.
Yeah.
And, you know, I let her know and kind of played along with her a little bit and said, hey, I'm sick. I got to go to a specialist in Seattle. And she goes, what? I said, well, if you watch TV, it might be on TV too.
I love it. I love it. Was a lot of your family able to make it out there for that first series slash game?
No, they weren't. I was it. It wasn't until later and my family, the Royals came in to play the Rangers in Arlington, that family and friends were able to come because that was a long haul from Houston to go to an American League city, obviously the closest one being in Arlington.
Yeah, just like the rookie when Jim Morris comes out there in Texas, well, with the Rays. But so you threw two shutout innings with 1K and one walk then in your first big league outing there. So warming up in the bullpen that day, jogging into a big league stadium, you know, to on the mound there for the first time, your lifetime dream. What was that moment like?
It was incredible. And, you know, like most ball players tell you, anytime they get a chance to face their former team, there's a little bit extra on the table there. And being that we were in Seattle, there's a little bit extra, effort, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, here's a question I love to ask guys I interview. I know the answer, but let's see if you do. So your first big league strikeout was that day. Can you name the batter?
I can't.
It was a good one. You got Ken Griffey.
Okay, I knew that I was able to strike out Griffey, but I didn't know he was the first one.
Yep, that was your first big league strikeout. So there you go, man. I'm digging up the knowledge here. So after that one outing, they sent you right back to Omaha. How come you were down and up so quickly?
I think that pitchers in the bullpen or the starters had gotten hurt and was on the short-term DL. And they needed somebody to come in, basically a pitcher, and take that spot until they came off the DL. And I can't remember who it was at the time, but it was, you know, I don't remember if the DL was 7 days or 10 days, but that was why it was so short.
Okay. And then you came back August 1st of 89. You finished the rest of the year in the big league. So, you know, that second call-up, those last 2 months of the year, you know, what do you remember most about that?
there's a lot of great memories. You know, one of the things I remember is walking into the clubhouse and seeing some of the names on the lockers and going, thinking to myself that, you know, you dreamed about playing with these guys, you know, the Brett Faberhagen, the Frank Whites, the George Bretts, and one classy guy, Bo Jackson.
Yeah.
You know, to see those names on TV and see them play is one thing, but to have them putting on a uniform that's the same as yours and being around you all the time is something else.
Now, you brought up Bo Jackson. I always ask everybody who played with him for their favorite Bo Jackson memory. I hear some of the most amazing things. What's some of the most, or, you know, one or two amazing things you saw Bo Jackson do?
Not so much that I saw him do field, because he was anything he did was so effortless and spectacular. But in the minor leagues, you don't have the best of equipment or a lot of equipment. And if I remember, after the first day or two that I was up there, I think the night before had been a wet, rainy night, and my shoes were wet and they weren't dry. And I started looking around the different workers to see who might have a same size shoe that I had. And I saw that Bo had the same size shoe. And I also saw that he had about 30 boxes of shoes in his locker. So I gathered up enough courage and walked up to him and asked him if he had an extra pair that maybe he could lend to me for the night until my shoes dried up. And he looked at me and turned his head and he said, "Just go in there and pick out what you need." And I said, "Well, what do I owe you for them?" He goes, "You don't owe me anything. You're a ball player."
Huh. That was nice. I love that guy, man. He was like, was it amazing for you watching him play football too, like on Sundays, you know, and being like, "Man, I played with that guy."
It was. You know, the one thing I missed is when I was called up to Seattle, I may have my dates off a little bit, but I don't think by too far. But if you remember, that was when he made that spectacular throw after a catch that he made in the outfield. And I don't think I missed it by a day or two in there. But I wish I could have seen it live.
Yeah, the Harold Reynolds play.
Right.
He does the most amazing things, that Bo. So you were good that year for the Royals. Really good, actually. 23 and two-thirds innings. You had a 3.42 ERA that year. So, you know, and you mentioned some of the guys you played with. How about George Brett?
You know, George was. He was the leader. He was, when you thought of the Royals, he was definitely one of the players that you thought about. You know, for a long time at baseball, that concept kind of got away where, you know, a team was defined by a player or a player defined the team. You know, it's starting to come back a little bit. Like my Astros here, when you think of them, you think of Altuve and Correa, you know. But at that time, when you thought of the Royals, you thought of George. And, of course, I don't think anybody in baseball and half of the people outside of baseball have to remember the Pine Tar incident.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. How about playing for Duke Wathen?
Duke was good. Being a catcher, you know, he knew how to handle the pitchers and, you know, was straightforward with us, you know, let us know what the expectations were. And, you know, I like playing for him.
Here's a couple random names that you're going to be like, oh, my gosh. So two of my other favorite players of all time were on that 89 team. That was like my first, you know, team I connected with as a kid. But do you remember anything about either Brad Wellman or Ray Palacios?
Ray Palacios, utility infielder.
Yep.
Played every position and maybe have even pitched.
He had huge hands. He was a guy that had giant hands.
And big hands. Just loved to be out there and loved to play the game. And he didn't care where you put him. He just wanted to play.
Yeah, I saw he played some third, some first, catcher. I think you're right about the pitching, too. Did a little bit of everything. Yeah. You know, he was he's a fireman now in Rochester. He was there on one of the first, like, responders on 9/11. Did you know that?
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
wow.
I interviewed him. He's a character, man. That's for sure. So you went home for the winter that year. So after 89, I'm sure you had to be feeling pretty good about where you were at in your career. What did the Royals tell you when you went home that winter?
You know, the club didn't communicate with you that much when the season was over, other than maybe to, let you know, here's the off-season, training program. We'd like you to at least look at and hopefully follow a little bit so that you come to spring training in shape. Thinking back to what happened that winter and the trade, that was a heartbreaker. That was disappointing.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. So it was December 15th, you and Charlie Liebrandt went over to the Braves for Gerald Perry. So was that the newspaper too, or how'd you find out about that news, and what were your thoughts at that moment?
I don't think that the clubs contacted us. I think the Braves player rep, and forgive me, home run hitting outfielder.
Dave Justice?
For the Braves.
Or was Dave Justice after that? Dale Murphy?
Dale Murphy.
There
Dale Murphy gave me a call and said, congratulations.
Wow.
And it was the first that I'd heard about it and knew about it. And, that winter was, and then the spring training of the next year was, if I remember correctly, very different for baseball, and I think may have been a one-of-a-kind, because it was the first year that the owners locked the players out of spring training, out of the facilities, because the contract had expired and didn't look like it was going to be resolved. So if you remember, we had a shortened and delayed spring training that year, and they had an expanded roster, I think, at the front end of the year. Because I knew the players weren't ready to pitch and weren't ready to play to start the season.
Yeah, and you made that opening day roster in 1990. Any cool story of how Bobby Cox told you, or any memories of that?
Not so much in that direction. The thing that I mostly remember about that team were the young guns at that time, and the players that obviously made a name for themselves, John Schmoltz and Glavin. We're just getting started. I think the year before was either their first time in the big leagues or their first full season. So that next year, 1990, was going to be a big year for them.
Yeah, they had so many good pitchers back then, and players coming up at that time. Who were some of the guys you kind of became closest to on that Braves team?
Like I said, that team was a little bit tough. It was thrown together because didn't really have much time to gel because of the shortened spring training. Players were going up and down, including myself. The Braves struggled that year, offensively and with pitching. And we just never seemed to gel as a team to be able to put it together and win some ball games.
Yeah, well, they were just beginning, I guess, shortly after that, the dynasty started. I mean, I'm sure you could see the talent around you, though, right, even back then?
You could. You really could.
Yeah. I remember watching you on TBS and being depressed that you were no longer a Royal, since there was no MLB Network back then, no MLB, satellite package or anything. So was it pretty cool for your family to be able to at least watch you on TBS back home?
Well, they kept up with me sometimes more than I wanted them to and let me know what I was doing wrong.
That's always good, though, right? You're not as lonely that way. So you appeared in 36 games that summer in Atlanta. You had a quick 8-game stint at AAA Richmond. So if you had to pick, just one or two favorite memories of that summer with the Braves, what sticks out about playing there in Atlanta at old Fulton County Stadium?
Well, probably the biggest thing at that point, and it was more personal for me, and that was when my first daughter was born, and I've got a picture of her. I guess it was family day when she was probably a month old, and I'm in my uniform. My wife's next to me, and I've got my daughter in my arm. But she was about a month premature, so I'm sitting there holding her about like a football. And from her head being in my palm to her feet being at my elbow, that's about how big she was.
Huh. So
that was pretty special.
That's cool. Now, this is something we don't have to talk about if you don't want to, but I read some article that said you and Bobby Cox had an argument about your role with the club. Is there any truth to that or not really?
You know, I'm not really sure where that came from. I've heard and read, you know, stories worse than that. But, you know, with the exception of the starters and those being, you know, the young guns at the time, I think Pete Smith was one of those, and I forget who the other two starters were. You know, if you looked at the transactions and the movement of the Braves, you know, for what's typically a five-man bullpen, I would venture to say that they probably had 18 relief pitchers throughout the course of the year. So, you know, it was a situation where, you know, nobody knew who was doing what.
Yeah.
So,
do you remember Ned Yost from back then at all, or was he not around at that point?
I don't believe he was there then.
Okay, I think he was a minor league manager shortly after that and then came up to Cox's staff later. Do you remember one of my other favorite random players? Do you remember Alex Infante? He spelled Alexis. He was like an infielder for that team. Do you remember him at all?
I'm thinking of shortstop, maybe?
Yep, short and second, yep. I have a thing for like utility infielders. I was an infielder when I was a kid, so I loved all these utility. I love those guys, though. Blauser and Lemke and Belliard. It might have been later, but those were fun teams.
Mark Lemke was a great guy. I liked him a lot.
Yeah, he put the ball in play, an action guy for sure. Jeff Treadway might have been on that team, I think, maybe.
Yep, he was. Treadway was Mark. I think was Jeff's successor heir to be at second base.
When Blauser had a little pop, Blauser could, you know, hit the gaps and hit a few home runs, which was pretty rare for a shortstop back then.
Back then it was, yeah.
Yeah. So so I guess it was late September. I mean, you must have been waived like with like 10 days or 7 days left in that season. You know, you were with Toronto for literally 1 week. I mean, what do you remember? One appearance. What do you remember with Toronto?
Met the team in Boston, if I remember. And again, it was the last few days of the season. You know, not really sure what was going to happen and go on for the rest of the year or for the off season. And Toronto made the decision that like a lot of ball players say, they didn't need my services anymore.
Yeah, you played in or pitched in just one game at Fenway Park then. So had some, you know, if somebody would have told you back then that was your last game in the big leagues, would you have ever believed them at that moment?
At the time, no. I would have thought surely some of the other teams would have use for a ball player who still had some good velocity and who could be a team player.
Yeah, well, you had numbers too. I mean, 6'6", threw hard. So, I mean, and then 1991, you signed with the Cubs and went to spring training with them. What made you choose the Cubs?
Actually, in 91, I signed with the Tigers.
The Dodgers?
The Detroit Tigers.
Oh, the Tigers. Okay, sorry, you broke up there.
Yeah, went to spring training with the Tigers and had some really good numbers with the Tigers and was expecting to go to Toledo, which is where the AAA team was. I think I gave up two runs in 18 innings and as a relief pitcher. And the last day of spring training, they came and I had the proverbial pink slip in my locker saying basically the same thing. They didn't have plans for me. So, you know, it was a situation where, you know, they needed somebody to pitch in spring training, to fill out a roster, so to speak. But when it came down to actually make the roster, I wasn't part of that.
Jeez. And then you ended up with the Cubs then in Iowa for about five games then?
I did. I stayed in shape thinking that somebody might call and got a call from the Cubs, and they had a player that got injured. And of course, obviously, trying to stay in shape is not the same as pitching and being game sharp. And I went up there and pitched in a few ball games, but I think that lasted maybe 2 weeks, something like that. And, you know, at that point, baseball was over.
Were you still healthy at that point, too? Like, the arm still felt good and everything?
Oh, yeah. Arm was fine.
Wow. That's so... I've always thought that when I looked at the back of your baseball card or baseball reference, I always thought that was so weird because you pitched well. You were just in the big leagues for 2 years, and then it's just like you disappeared. So it was just, you know, bad luck, I guess, huh?
Well, you know, nobody will admit to it, but I think a large part of it had to do something with age. I mean, you know, at that point I was about 30 years old. And, you know, when you've got the same numbers as someone who's 21 and maybe left-handed,
yeah.
You know, who are you going to pick?
So, you know, a lot of guys I talk to when they first, you know, retire from baseball or walk away, I mean, most guys don't leave on their own terms, obviously. So did you have a bitter / I don't want to be around at stage like a lot of guys do, where you just kind of put it out of your life, or were you burned out on it, or were you okay walking away?
Well, no, I wasn't an okay. It was something that I had, you know, I played the game because I loved to play the game. Making a living at it was great. But, you know, it was several years before I would even think about going to a ball game.
Hmm.
You know, it was tough to see ball players that you played with and against, that you knew compete against them on equal terms and have a good shot of beating them if they were an opponent, you know, still being in the game. So, you know, it was tough. It was tough, and it doesn't surprise me that other ball players have commented that that it took a while to get that out of their system.
Have you ever been back to Kansas City since 89?
I have not. I would really like to. You know, I know the stadium has changed a little bit. I think it used to be turf. It may be natural grass now.
Oh, it's changed a lot. It's got the fountains now. You can walk behind the fountains, and there's, you know, amusement park little stuff back there, like rides and mini golf, and it's amazing. Restaurants. You gotta come. I'm trying to get winners to come back out here. Maybe you guys can meet up out here or something for a little trip.
And see, if Matt and I get together, I have to listen to all those Buffalo stories.
Yeah, but I'd love to tag along as a third wheel and get some barbecue and hear you guys talk baseball. So maybe someday. I'll put it on your bucket list. You got to get back here. So who else do you still – is Matt the main guy you still talk to from your Royals days, or is there anybody else you still keep in touch with from time to time?
There was another pitcher who never made it to the big leagues that I played with in Memphis, who was probably one of the smartest – pitchers that I had known, and he was a closer, and he was left-handed, and he probably topped out at 78 miles an hour.
Who was that?
And his name was Mark Shiflett.
Okay.
And he coaches in Florida baseball, but I learned a lot from him how to be a pitcher, not just a thrower, because I was amazed that he could get guys out throwing what he did. And he said, and we roomed together, and I would talk with him, and I asked him one time, I said, how do you do it? He goes, it's easy. I just throw slow, slower, and slower. And they're the ones that are trying to hit slow, slower, and slower. And he was the first time that I'd ever seen anybody successfully and multiple times throwing
the
Ephus pitch.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Zach Greinke, you know, threw that a lot, too, early on.
Never saw anybody in contact with that pitch. But they all tried.
That's great. Yeah, you probably watching him, you're probably like, how is this guy not getting shelled every time out there? I remember him, though. I remember his baseball card. There was a Steve Shiflett later, probably not related, though, right? I'm assuming.
I think he was an only child. He was out of... he lived in Georgia, I think maybe Birmingham.
Oh, okay.
But I ran across him, like I said, with the Royals in Memphis. I think he may have been in the Yankees organization.
Okay. Do you have any, you know, memories of Kansas City as an actual city? Any favorite places or area you lived in, or anything off the field you remember about here?
You know, when we lived there, because the time was so short, you know, you mentioned it was 2 months. Well, you cut that in half because half of that time you're on the road.
Yeah.
And I think we lived in Independence,
okay,
which is south of where the ballpark is. And, you know, all the big-name ballplayers all lived out in the city where I see you called from, which is
Lee Summit.
Lee Summit,
yep.
I think.
Yep. Yep, good old Lee Summit. Yep, either Lee Summit or Overland Park is where a good amount of them.
Yep, those were the two places, and those were, if I remember my geography, those were kind of in the opposite direction.
Yeah, they were. It's not too far, maybe 20 minutes, a little bit of a hike.
Yeah.
From each other. Is there any moment in a Royals uniform I didn't mention? Do you have a favorite game, or, you know, pitched out of a jam, or is there anything that sticks out, or like, you know, getting a certain hitter out, or anything I didn't mention that sticks out about your Royals days?
Well, obviously, you mentioned Ken Griffey. That was a lot of fun because, you know, the history of even him at that time is in a young age, being the pedigree that he was with his father. And if I remember correctly, I had the same similar situation with Ricky Henderson with the A's.
Mm-hmm.
And that 89 year was the year that, if I remember correctly, the A's beat the Royals, I think by a half a game.
Yeah, it came down to the wire.
To go on into the playoffs. So, you know, facing him, obviously, two Hall of Famers, and having success against him was special. And, you know, probably the biggest moment that I had was, you know, coming into a ball game for Brett Saberhagen that year. And I think he won the Cy Young that year.
Yep.
And getting my one and only save for the Royals that year, you know, against the Angels. And then being interviewed by Lynn Dawson, who was, I think, KC quarterback. And
yep.
he was a sports reporter for one of the TV stations there.
Mm-hmm.
I have that and remember it fondly.
Oh, do you have a copy of it even?
I do. VHS tape.
Oh, someday you're going to have to transfer that.
It will be converted soon.
Okay, good, because I've got to see you pitch again. I saw you pitch when I was 8 years old. I would love to actually, you know, see a DVD copy of you pitching in a game. I've got a whole bunch of old games from like 1990, 91, you know, like maybe 60, but I don't have anything from 89, so that would be amazing if you happen to have any footage from back then. So it sounds like you had, you know, overall positive memories here, which is great for me to hear. I guess my last question for you is, what would you like to say to all the Royals fans listening right now?
Well, KC fans, they used to say that you were in a supermarket, you could compete with the Yankees out there, but you were one classy city. You had a lot of classy fans there. And keep supporting those Royals. I may live in Houston, and I may be an Astros fan there, but the Royals will always be deep in my heart.
Yeah, we loved having you here, and I'm glad you were part of the history of my favorite team, and that we can help and you know, preserve it as well. And hopefully, we'll get you back here one of these days. You got to bring the fan back. So your kids were probably never here, were they?
No, they weren't. They weren't around at that point yet, and you know, I still want to. I've got, you know, a very close friend who from Omaha, and still want to try and make it up to Omaha. And of course, if you go there, you got to go through KC.
Yeah, 3 hours. 3 hours each way up I-29. You can go check out the new Omaha Storm Chasers ballpark. It's nice, but it's not Rosenblatt. I was actually there the last game at Rosenblatt. It was a sad night of my life. I grew up going to games there. I grew up in Lincoln, Nebraska, which is like 45 minutes away. So it was sad for me to see them tear that. It's not the same when you drive by the interstate there and there's it's just the zoo, but there's no stadium anymore. It's really a weird thing.
Mm. Well, you know, one of the cool things that I always thought about Omaha was very near there. There is, I think, the NORAD and a SAC base.
Oh yeah,
Offutt.
Yeah.
Offutt, it was there, mm-hmm. And I can remember looking out my apartment window and seeing some very special aircraft flying overhead.
Yeah.
B-52s, B-1s, SR-71s, and a few other things that were moving very fast.
That's where they took President Bush on the day of 9/11. Did you know that? They flew him underground there to Offutt.
Oh, I didn't. Well, we actually, some of the ballplayers on an off day actually got a tour underground.
Oh, wow.
And how that was arranged, I don't know, but I loved every second of it. I got a picture of me inside either, I think, a B-1 bomber in the cockpit, you know, sticking my head out waving that my wife took a picture of.
That is absolutely amazing. That's amazing. Well, we got to stay in touch, and I look forward to hopefully talking more in the future and seeing you back up here one of these days here in KC and in Omaha, of course, too.
Well, thanks a lot, Dave. It was a lot of fun talking to you and reliving some of those fun memories from the past.